Welcome to this IBM Storage Talk, TSM 6, Chalk Talk with Development Deduke conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Ms. Tricia Jiang. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's call. Today we have two of our developers with us. We have Matt Anglin, who is our king of Dedupe over in TSM server development, as well as Howard Martin, who has been Matt's helper getting Dedupe implemented. What we're going to be doing today is I'll walk you through an introduction to the new built-in Dedupe in TSM 6. And then at that point, we will open it up for questions from you all that Howard and Matt can answer. This is one of the Chalk Talks we're doing in a series of talks based around TSM 6. We've already recorded quite a few, so if you want to go out and hear some of the general overviews as well as calls on TSM upgrades, those are out on the Tivoli Talk website. In addition, this month we will have a reporting and monitoring Chalk Talk, as well as the TSM family updates for like TSM for databases, TSM for mail, and those other products. So do take a look at those. Those were sent out in the alerts, and take time to join those as well. There is a presentation that you can download from the website, either from the Tivoli Talk website or the Partner World. And I'm not going to be going through the entire presentation today, but I will be starting on slide 29, which focuses on the Dedupe portion. This entire presentation has been recorded and is out on the distance learning if you'd like to hear the entire presentation done. So with that, one of the biggest hitters in TSM 6 was our built-in data dedupe. Now, data deduplication has received a lot of press lately. And if you consider why it's received a lot of press, it'll make you stop and think, gee, maybe TSM really is very well positioned. You have to remember, data dedupe is a form of data reduction. So when we start talking about data reduction, that means backing up less data, keeping less data on your server, on your backup server. And the thing about TSM is that from the beginning, we have done something called progressive backup, where we only back up the new or changed files. And this is in comparison to our competitors who do a wasteful weekly full. And so if you think about it, from the beginning, our approach to doing backups has been very conservative in the amount of data that we send to the TSM server. And so we haven't felt the pain of having a lot of redundant data on the TSM server as much as our competitors have because of the way that they approached data backup. So from the beginning, TSM has been better about sending less data to our server. But we do understand the fact that multiple clients, different clients might be sending the same information, or that there might be portions of the data, blocks of the data, that are the same. And thus there is, even with TSM, the ability to gain additional leverage the disk storage space better by utilizing dedupe. Now, it's also important to remember that even prior to TSM 6 and with TSM 6 on, you can utilize other dedupe strategies with TSM. For instance, we have Diligent Protect here, which you can use as a virtual tape library, which does do dedupe very effectively and can not only do it across multiple clients, but across multiple TSM servers. So what we'll be talking about today is the built-in dedupe, which came out with TSM 6. Now, this built-in dedupe is included with the license for your TSM servers, your TSM Extended Edition servers. So as long as the customer has licensed their TSM server and are up to date on maintenance, they will be able to utilize this new feature. Now, the built-in dedupe occurs on the TSM server. As you know, dedupe can occur a lot of different places in the storage hierarchy. It can occur on the actual production client-side machines prior to the backups occurring. It can occur on the VTLs. It can occur in the disk storage systems themselves. But with TSM, where we're doing our dedupe is on the TSM server. And we're doing it after the backup procedures have completed. So this is called out of band. Now, the reason we chose to do it out of band is so that we are not impacting any of the TSM backup windows. So the backup windows will complete, and then we'll take the additional cycles that are needed to actually do the dedupe. Now, dedupe will be a scheduled process, so you will set up a schedule for dedupe to run, and it will consume additional TSM server resources. Now, when we do dedupe, it's being supported on disk storage pools with the dev class of file. And customers can choose to turn on dedupe if they wish on these storage pools with dev class of files, or if they find it's not working, then of course they could always turn it off again. When we do dedupe on these disk storage pools, we actually utilize two hash methodologies so that we prevent collisions where you might accidentally think you have a match, but in reality you don't. So by having two hashing algorithms, the SHA-1 and the MD5 hashing algorithm, we can reduce the likelihood to a very, very, very minimum amount that we will have a false match. With the TSM-6 data dedupe, if you turn to slide 30, you'll see that we're actually doing it at a block level. So this is not a file-level dedupe, which would be more of a single-instance store. We're actually doing a dedupe at the block level. And so we'll look at an object that's stored on this disk storage pool, be it a backup file, be it an archive file, be it a HSM file. We don't care where the files came from. If they're sitting in that particular disk storage pool, we will consider them for dedupe. And we'll go through and we'll look at the, we'll take the object and we'll use an algorithm which will chunk it up into variable sizes. And at that point, it'll go through and it'll identify the chunks and see if we have a match. If we do have a match, we will then only store one copy of that chunk. The other chunks we can get rid of. Now, when we actually get rid of the redundant chunks, that doesn't actually happen until reclamation processing occurs on that disk storage pool. So if you turn to slide 31 now. So the process to do dedupe occurs as a secondary process, as a scheduled process, and then the process to actually free up the space will occur when reclamation is run against that disk storage pool. Now, it's important to remember that first, it's a scheduled process, and secondly, you've got to run your reclamation. And third, if your customers are then going to migrate their data out to tape or to other storage pools which don't have other types of storage pools, that data will be reconstituted. So anytime we move the data out of these storage pools, we reconstitute it. And that becomes important when your customers lay out the chain of events that happen on a daily basis. So what you'll probably want your customers to do is their backups will complete, you'll create the copy storage pool so that you take additional copies off-site, and after all that is done, then you would run your data dedupe and then your reclamation after that. When a client goes to access data out of this disk storage pool, it's invisible to them that there was deduplication done on that file. So only the TSM server knows what's going on. The client doesn't have to worry about that at all. If, for instance, a customer has legacy data out there that they want to move into a disk storage pool to be deduped, they could easily do that. They could do a move process and move that old data into the storage pool, and then it would become part of the dedupe process. When we go about sizing the dedupe storage pools, we found that you can store about 40% more data on the same size disk storage pool. And so that's the ratio that we'd look at when you're looking at how much savings will the customer actually get out of turning on dedupe, and if you're implementing a new TSM server, how would you go about sizing that? So you would just consider, okay, this will give me about 40% more capacity for that disk storage pool. The nice thing about this built-in data dedupe strategy for TSM-6 is that it's native. We have no requirements on specific types of hardware. We don't have any type of requirements on additional software or anything else. It's built-in. It's native. If a customer does want to look at utilizing other IBM dedupe solutions like Diligent, There are things they need to consider. The nice thing about Protect tier is that it works very well when you have multiple TSM servers, because the Protect tier store VTL appliance will help dedupe across multiple TSM servers. It'll also work if you're using a very large capacity of data that you plan on pushing through this dedupe into the dedupe. So, yes, Diligent does cost extra. It is another purchase that they would have to make. But in some cases, it will be the correct solution for customers because of its capacity as well as its speed for doing the dedupe on during the ingestion of the data out to the VTL. And so it can dedupe up to 500 megabytes per second. And it can dedupe up to 25 petabytes of dedupe capacity out there. So, yes, we have a built-in solution, but, yes, there are other solutions in the IBM portfolio for dedupe as well. Now, dedupe might not be for everybody. If you turn to slide 32, there are some considerations your customer needs to make about dedupe. First of all, how are they using the disk storage pools? Are they truly storing data out there for more than one day? Are they keeping it out there for an extended period of time? Or are they almost immediately migrating it out to tape? If they're almost immediately migrating out to tape, it really doesn't serve any purpose to run through the extra processing of doing a dedupe and only to have to reconstitute it when you migrate it out to tape. Versus if they're truly keeping it out on disk for an extended period of time, then it makes sense to do the additional processing of dedupe and then therefore gain the extra capacity of that disk storage pool. Also, what is the resources they have on their TSM server? Do they have the extra cycles available as well as the resources available on that machine to actually run dedupe? Or is their TSM server already so taxed that this would just make completing other processes impossible? Okay, so TSM 6 is where dedupe was introduced. It is built in. TSM server-side dedupe, it is done at the block level, it's done after the backups are complete, and it doesn't cost your customers with TSM Extended Edition anything else. So with that, Matt or Howard, do you have anything extra to add before we open up for questions?
I don't. Not me either.
Okay, Erin, can we go ahead and open it up for questions?
Certainly. If you'd like to ask a question, you may signal by pressing star, then 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're joining us on a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is disabled before pressing the corresponding digits. Again, that's star 1 to ask a question. And we'll take our first question from Daniel Thompson with IBM.
Hi, everybody. I have a question. If we have one file type device class we've enabled deduplication on, and we want to do a copy storage pull or even a migration to another file type device class that also has deduplication, do we copy it over in a dehydrated fashion, or is it reconstituted and have to be re-deduplicated?
Well, this is Matt. The process of deduplication is a two-phase process. The first, after the data is stored originally in the first pool, we have an identify process that comes along and analyzes the file and breaks it up into the chunks, which are then, as Tricia said, removed during reclamation. But in reality, they are removed any time we can remove them. So in particular, if you are taking it to a copy pool that's also dedupe, if the copy pool has common chunks, we will not move those chunks. We will just link up to the new ones. Now, one thing to keep in mind is we have the idea of a copy pool is to guarantee copies of data, and so it's important to recognize that that's kind of a dangerous thing to do. If you think about what the purpose of the copy pool is to make sure you have enough redundant copy of the data on the server such that any kind of media failure wouldn't make your data render it unrestorable. So you have to be careful when you're putting things into a copy pool that do you really want to have only one copy of each chunk in a pool, which could affect many hundreds of files if those chunks were lost. Not that you can't do it.
And so if I understand, if it's already been deduped, and you're going to a deduped target, it will stay dehydrated. And if it hasn't been deduped yet, but there's dedupe on both sides, it'll actually do it at the time you create the copy or do the migration or whatever.
Right.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
And to further clarify that, it's not when you say dehydrated. It's actually the duplicate chunks in pools may be different. For a copy pool, they shouldn't, because that should reflect what's on a primary pool. But if you were to do a move data from one primary pool to another primary pool, the contents of the individual pool determine the deduplication. So we may have to re-expand some chunks that were previously removed while eliminating different ones as we move the data. But in any case, when we move the data, we will minimize the amount of data that we move and store.
Fantastic. Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Al Koenig with IBM.
Hey, good morning, everyone. I had a couple of questions, actually. The first has to do with the comment on slide 29 where it says that if the client is at version 6, we'll be able to do a better job of identifying metadata versus content. Do we have any kind of numbers that we can share with customers? Because every customer I've talked to so far about dedupe wants to know, well, how good are you going to be able to do this, right? So, you know, in that area, like if the client was version 6 as opposed to, say, like a version 5.5, and you deduped both, how much extra could we expect to realize by having the client at version 6?
Well, luckily, not much. But the biggest change that we made between the 5.5 client and the 6.1 client is, first of all, we some clients, not all of them, don't always store the metadata first. And when I talk about metadata, I'm talking about extended attributes on Windows or ACLs, things like that, anything other than the actual file data. Some platforms, and I can't remember which one since that's the client, but I think it might have been Mac, they actually store some metadata after they store file data. So the first order of business in 6.1 is to rearrange the streams inside the client that they send to the server so that all the metadata is placed up front. Secondly, we have enhanced the client to let the server know at the point they're switching over from metadata to file data. And on the server side, we do not deduplicate the metadata because that has other things in it like the file name, owner information, attributes, timestamps, which are not going to deduplicate anyway because they're unique strings generally. So the first piece of any file that we get on the server is generally not deduplicated. We consider that the metadata. So the 6.1 client has been improved so that we kind of get exactly where that breakpoint is. On the server side, for legacy data, 5.5, API, other things, we've actually written some code to go inside the stream as we're analyzing it and try to find the stream so that the client doesn't have to tell us, right? We basically guess where the metadata is, which seems kind of strange. It's all one product. But one of the historical aspects of TSM has been that the server never really cared what it was storing. And in 6.1, we're actually changing that now. So the server is a little bit more aware of the data. We know how the client sends it up, but each client's different, so we do the best we can to try to guess where the metadata ends and where the file data begins so that we start the deduplication at the same point. What we found in our own testing is that the difference might be 2 to 3% more deduplication on a 6.1 client than a 5.5 for your basic run-of-the-mill data. If you get a lot of ACLs or extended attributes and things like that, that may change that number, but based on our, quote, guessing, I don't think it will. The other big difference is that in 5.5, for compressed objects, the client starts the compression and actually compresses some of the earlier parts that we would consider metadata. And in 6.1, they modified that so that the compression starts a little bit later. So the actual results of the compressed data are different. Now, as it turns out, compression algorithms are very locale specific. So if you have compressed the same object that's compressed by a 5.5 client and a 6.1 client, there's a good chance the first chunk will not compare, but that subsequent ones will due to the nature of the locality of compression. That makes sense. So you will actually get some deduplication further down the stream. So the larger the file is, the better chance of deduplication, even when they're compressed in slightly different ways.
I had another question as well. It has to do with, like, the types of objects stored, right? I would think that if we're doing file system type of backups, they probably wouldn't have a tendency to compress or dedupe as well as, say, like a nightly full Oracle or SQL Server database backup might. Do we have any, like, numbers around, like, those two phenomenon, like what a customer could expect in the way of file system? And I know that's probably going to be, it depends, but certainly for a database, I would think, you back up that same Oracle database every night, and you realistically should only, even though you're doing a full backup potentially, maybe you're only, when it's all said and done, the dedupe's only going to have the blocks that have changes in them.
Right. I know that we have been running tests on large images and other things. Unfortunately, I don't have any numbers to share.
Okay.
I don't know what our plans are for producing them, but we get the question a lot, so I'm sure we'll be producing something. But I unfortunately don't have much to offer right now on that.
Well, okay, maybe let me phrase it a different way. If a customer were to use the Diligent Protect tier to do the deduplication, would it be reasonable to expect that it would roughly come out the same, or would they get added value? I mean, given like a single TSM server, right? If it's multiple TSM servers, I realize that, yeah, they're going to have a bigger benefit. But just the single TSM server comparing Diligent to the way we're doing it in TSM, should it come out roughly the same?
I think some of the runs that we've done when we compared our data against Diligent have shown that they're pretty much the same. But that was more, let's see, what kind of data was. That was not image kind of data or a complete, like an image backup. But that was more, incremental backups of files over and over and over tended to show pretty much the same results. When you add in compression and things like that, I can't remember the exact numbers, but they were pretty similar.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, press star 1. We'll hear next from Daniel Bonche with TechTrade Computers.
Hello there. My question is around the chunk sizes of the blocks of the way that the dedupe works. Is it possible to adjust the chunk size that the dedupe works at? Or is there a specific chunk size that you can quote?
It's not adjustable, but it's actually kind of dynamic. The way we do it is we start with a basic chunk size of 256K, but any file smaller than that, the chunk will always end at the end of an object, end of a file. In TSM, for years now, what we've done is we've taken smaller files and we pack them together into larger files on the server for data movements so that we reduce some database overhead. The things like Diligent, when they analyze the data, they have to kind of figure out where one file ends and the next one begins. Well, the TSM knows where one ends and one begins. So what we do is any file that's less than 256K, well, let me rephrase that. Whenever we hit the end of a logical file that we've been analyzing, we will end the chunk at that point. We don't bleed it into the next one because that would be the metadata of the next object, right? So we're pretty good at figuring out where things end, and anything smaller than like 2K doesn't get attempted at all. So basically, with the with the limitation that any file smaller than 256 will generally end up as one chunk, and then anything over than that will take 256K chunks. We figured that's a pretty good balance for managing the chunk size. We did some tests with a 128K chunk and didn't notice a large difference in the effectiveness, but that doubles the number of chunks we have to track, so we settled on 256.
Okay. Thanks.
And once again, that's star one to ask a question. We'll pause to give everyone another opportunity.
Matt and Howard, that brings up the question, what other files are excluded from being deduped? As I understand, encrypted files, perhaps?
That's right. When the client sends up data, they use a flag. Again, this gets back into what I mentioned previously. In the past, the server never had any idea if an object was encrypted. Well, now it does. Based on the information that the client originally sent with the file, the server can look at that and look at the flags and determine if a file is encrypted. And if it is encrypted, we do not attempt to deduplicate it. And that's the only file that we restrict at this point.
And files underneath the two small files.
Right, if they're too small, yeah.
Now, what is the processing? A question I hear a lot is, what is the processing overhead of the actual dedupe procedure?
I don't know if I can quantify it, but I can. In general, what we do is, imagine you stored 20 gig, and we've written it out to four file volumes as a number of objects. As the volumes are being written to, if you have deduplication running all the time, a process will wake up, open up that file, and read one object at a time. And when I say one object, I'm talking about one of these larger, what we call aggregates on the server, not an individual client file, but a larger container file on the server. And we read that in and build a complete list of all the chunks that we find in that particular object. So however long it takes for us to basically do a retrieval, because we're an audit, we read the data, analyze it, and then make a list of chunks. Once we've got the complete list of chunks for the object, we go to the database and do a massive update for the object to redefine it into a series of chunks. So the resources you need for that are the disk I/O to read all the data back after you've written it, and the CPU processing required to calculate MD5 and SHA-1 hashes on the data. The SHA-1 in particular is more expensive. It's a larger digital signature. It's 160 bits. An MD5 is 128 bits, but the algorithm for an MD5 is much faster than SHA. But we have to calculate them both over the entire objects. So what you're going to see is CPU utilization and disk I/O. You'll see bursts of database activity as we finish up reading each object.
And the opposite, when a client goes to restore, what type of delay would they see?
Well, since it's all from disk, there shouldn't be too much of a delay. That's the whole point of deduplication, is to get your data off of tape, where you might have a mount delay, and get it onto disk where you know the data's all sitting resident. We've made some enhancements to restore, to cache up multiple volumes. So if you start reading an object and that requires that we go to another volume to get the next piece of that object because of deduplication, we will keep up to 10 volumes mounted for a particular session. And basically, once we go to the chunk that once we go to the other volume to get that chunk, we'll come back to the original one to finish the object, and we'll already have it mounted still. So we're able to switch and keep volumes mounted much faster. So that has helped us get the restore time pretty close to normal restore. I'm not sure. Howard, do you remember the exact number? Was it 5% or less throughput on restore?
It was around there, Matt. Yeah.
So it's not. a little bit of a delay while we go and round up all the data, because you can't. The benefit of having it all sequential, of course, is you get the disk streaming and, you know, everything is great. But that's the inherent downside of deduplication, is we have to reassemble the object, and that usually requires less efficient disk I.O.
And we do have a few more questions from the phone. We'll take a follow-up from Al Koenig.
Yes. You mentioned that, like, we now flag encrypted data. This is kind of not necessarily related to dedupe, but do we have that externalized in any fashion where a customer could go and get a list of all their encrypted files?
That was my intent, but I'm not sure we actually made a command or anything to display it. But the compression and encryption tags, if you will, now exist as their own column in the database. And I'm trying to remember. It's in the backup objects table, but I'm not sure if you do a select on the backup objects table if it'll show you that column or not. But the goal would be, yes, to make that available. I'm just not sure we got it in 6.1.
Okay. Yeah, I have a lot of, well, not a lot, but I have some customers that are doing encryption, and they've asked me that question repeatedly.
Right.
I think it would be good if we could end up having that as a capability. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. In fact, when you upgrade from 5.5 to 6.1, we, if I'm not mistaken, we actually look at that data and set those columns as part of the upgrade. So they wouldn't need to do anything other than upgrade to get that information. I'm just not sure if it's available on a select.
We'll take another question from Daniel Thompson.
Hi again, guys. I'm just curious if you have any deduplication futures topics you can address, whether we're going to address it different ways or just looking at that, what we may come up with.
Well, I'm not sure what we've discussed in terms of features with what we're allowed to disclose, so I don't know if I want to talk much about that.
Fair enough.
Again, that's star one to ask a question, and we'll hear again from Daniel Batch.
Hi. Regarding the storage pool volumes, which are, of course, going to be file device class, storage pool volumes. Is there any guidance as to the size of volumes? What's best considering dedupe?
I don't think the size really matters. I kept trying to think this through in my head to see if it matters. The default now for file volumes is 2 gig, but certainly you could go up to larger volumes. As with any, it's kind of, deduplication has the same effect as does expiration, in the sense that once we, after you've stored the volume, written all the data, and we analyze it, we find that, you know, but lo and behold, there's a whole bunch of data in here that could be eliminated if we were to reclaim it, right? And the amount of that data as a percentage will be the same, whether you have a 2 gig or 4 gig. It's, you know, mathematically it would be the same. If 10% of the data is duplicate, then 10% of 2 gig is the same as, you know, or 10% of 4 gig, it's still going to be the same amount of free space in percentages. And since reclamation is triggered off percentages, I don't know that it would really matter whether the volume was 2 gig or 4 gig. The you don't see the space reclaimed out of a pool until you reclaim it, you know, until you reclaim the volume. So some people, you know, if you really want to maximize space savings, you would set your storage pool reclamation threshold very low, but that's just going to cause, you know, cause us to keep moving data over and over and over. So there's, but again, that's the same problem you have with expired data today, right? When do you decide that 60% of your volume is good enough, and I'm going to squeeze out the 40% and start a new volume. It's the same thinking with dedupe, right? I mean, you have to decide how tight to make that threshold in terms of free space on a volume, regardless of the size of the volume. So I don't think the size of the volume matters.
Okay, then.
Again, star one, and we have a question from Marcus Snow with IBM. And go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, this is Marcus. I really have two questions. One is regarding what was the reason why we choose to implement deduplication on file device class and not a random access pool? And the other, because you mentioned the restore processing, that you have to mount multiple file volumes and then probably switch back and forth between them to get the blocks. And the second question is this deduplication scheduled like an expire inventory job so that you can define a certain point in time where it should run?
Well, let's talk about the first one first. Why did we pick file over random? The real issue with that is random. Our random, and the way we have it set up inside the server, while it may seem easier to do deduplication with random, actually is a lot more difficult. Sequential volumes with the reconstruction that we do when we move data from pool to pool lends itself more readily to deduplication. So it was more of an internal, what can the server do, as opposed to what's the best way to, what might make most sense. Our internal organization of the server drove us that way, right? If we had done random disk, we'd probably still be writing the code. So that was pretty much the reason for that. It was that, how the server set up and how we wanted deduplication to work. The second question, I forgot what the second question was.
The second question was, is this a scheduled process when TSM analyzes the data and does the deduplication, or is it done automatically once you finish backing up the file?
It's actually kind of both. Howard, do you want to talk about that?
Sure. Yeah, there's when you initially define a primary storage pool to be dedupe, if you turn dedupe on, we'll actually create one of the identify processes. And something to remember about this is this process really never goes away unless you cancel the process or update your storage pool to say dedupe equals no or specify the number of processes to be zero. So if you create one of these processes, it'll run until you tell it not to. Now, so you can do it, and that way it's kind of always there and it's always analyzing data. Now, you can also set up the service so that it's not so automatic. You can actually disable disable that identify process thread, and then with that we have another command called identify duplicates that will actually go off that you can schedule. And you can actually set it up. There's a duration parameter on that. And you can actually, what that identify duplicates command does, it'll start a number of processes that you specify, identify duplicates processes, for a certain amount of time, just like other processes. You can schedule a reclamation to run for an hour a day at starting at noon or something. This identify duplicates process, command, you can do the same kind of thing. You can say, I want to go off at midnight. I want to go and I want to start identifying, reading these files, breaking them into chunks, and I only want to do that for 4 hours. And you can have four processes running. So you can either do it automatically and just let the server, start these processes and run. And they can run indefinitely. Or if you choose to schedule them, you can set up the server such that you can schedule these identify duplicates command to go off and to analyze, analyze these objects whenever you so desire. It can be done either way, automatically or manually through a schedule.
And identifying means also then getting rid of the duplicates.
No. Identifying just actually goes off, reads the objects, breaks it up into the chunks and it looks for any links. Now, it's not until reclamation runs that the actual duplicate objects are removed.
Okay.
Right. So it's a two-phase process. We've got to first of all have to identify the chunks and their any duplicates, and that's the identify process thread that we're talking about. And then after that's done, and when reclamation runs, if the volume has chunks that have duplicates elsewhere, during that reclamation process, those chunks will be removed when being moved to the next volume.
Okay.
Okay.
Very similar to expiration. When expiration runs and deletes an object, it doesn't actually go away right away.
Right.
It has to be
True. Claimed. Yeah, that's right. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
And we'll hear again from Daniel Thompson.
Hey, guys. I have a question. Hopefully we get an answer for this time. The both these processes, particularly the one that identifies the duplicates, will it give results, when it summarizes its results at the end about how much space can be gained by running the reclaim process or any other process that would get the space back?
If these processes are active, you can issue a query process command, and it'll tell you, what it's doing, what it's working on, what volume it's working on, and how many duplicate bytes and duplicate chunks have been identified. And Matt, did we ever put that into the summary table? I don't know. Did we ever get that far?
I don't think it's in the summary table.
Yeah.
But I think what Dan was asking is whether or not the pending stuff. It came up in the beta. Someone wanted to know, well, how do I know how much data is on the volumes that hasn't been eliminated because of deduplication? Is that your question?
Well, for example, a lot of processes, whether they create an actual summary record or not, or just put something in activity log, they'll give different kinds of information. So ideally, the perfect world, we get information to say, here's how much physical storage, here's how much is deduplicated already, and here's how much that you could gain by running deduplication again, that kind of stuff. And even if it's just an activity log record. Do we know if we get that level of detail out of it?
Yeah, at the end of these identify duplicate processes, if you actually run them through a schedule, via schedule, and you run the duration, at the end of that, when that process exits, it'll tell you how many files it processed, how many extents it processed, and how many bytes duplicate bytes it discovered. And like I say, at any point while that process is running, you can do a query process command, and it'll display that process and give you the same information.
Do we know if we have any reports and the new reporting stuff that's based upon deduplication and how well that management's going, things like that?
I don't know. Matt, you know of any?
No.
Anything in the reporting?
No. The only thing that comes to mind is the
storage pool?
Yeah, query storage pool.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
We have another question from Al Koenig.
Yeah, the question's around the automatic process that's there to identify duplicates. If that's going all the time, will it sit idle if it's more or less gone through the whole storage pool, or does it just keep round-robining through the entire storage pool?
No, if it'll be idle. There are periods of time where it will be idle, and if you do a query process, we'll display the state of that process. So if it's idle, it'll tell you. If it's busy, it will tell you, oh, by the way, you're busy, and by the way, here's the volume it's working on. So if there's no activity, if everything in the storage pool has been analyzed, then the identified process threads will identify duplicate threads will be in an idle state. So they're not continuously consuming CPU. No, it's not until something enters the storage pool and is stored on the volume that they'll wake up and actually process those files.
So in that scenario, like something new enters, do we more or less go through the whole storage pool, or we just go through the new data that was just entered?
Just the new data. Right. Yeah, we keep track of the files, whether they've been analyzed or not. So if new files enter, we know which ones those are. And what we do is we hand each of those threads a volume, and we know which files on that volume have not been analyzed, and we'll look at only those files, and nothing else.
So would it be fair to say then that, like, you know, I keep hearing all this about the I/O intensive, CPU intensive thing to do this process, but wouldn't it really be like based on how much new data is entered as to like what the activity is really going to be on a daily basis?
Oh, absolutely. That's it exactly.
Yeah, we're maybe like potentially scaring people, I think.
Yeah.
This is going to be, oh man, you're going to like really suck up resources, but it's really dependent on how much new data you introduce to the TSM server each day.
Exactly. I mean, the whole spectrum, I mean, it goes all the way from, say you have a legacy storage pool that has this, you know, and you decide to flip on, you go to 6.1, you decide to flip the switch. I mean, that baby's going to be busy for a long time, right? So versus once you get to the point where, okay, I'm down to the point where I'm only analyzing the data that enters the pool for that day. And it all depends on how much data you put there, right? So there's a whole range of how busy this is going to be. Maybe scaring some of the some of our customers with that information, but still that process is very CPU and IO intensive. So when it's running, it's a busy little puppy. So.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
We have another question from Marcus now.
Hi. Since you talked about the CPU load, wouldn't it then be a good idea if you have a storage pool? A very big storage pool, and you now want to turn on the deduplication to say, I create a new storage pool, turn on deduplication on that new storage pool, and move the data day by day just a little bit into the new pool so that I can control how much data is really deduplicated per hour or per batch that I enter in order to control more the CPU resources?
Sure. I mean, yeah, that'd be one way to do it, you bet. You could, if you didn't want to move the data, you could actually schedule the identify duplicates command to run for an hour every night or something. And then it would go off and would run for an hour and then end. But yeah, you could do it that way. I mean, you could set up a new pool that has dedupe enabled, and then you could control what gets moved into the new pool, and that way, that's one way of controlling your CPU and IO usage.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Another question. I think the Diligent product does, once it identifies a duplicate block, it really goes on and reads it bit by bit and really compares it if it has stored that block already. Are we doing that also, that we not only be very unlikely to have hash collisions, but really make sure that there are no hash collisions?
Matt, do you want to take that? I'm not real familiar with the Diligent.
Right. No, we don't do that. And we looked at a number of things to mitigate that, and let me just go through them all. First of all, there's math. With our 160-bit digital signature, there's a 50-50 chance of a collision, a false positive collision, once you store 2 to the 80th objects. Okay? And I don't know what that is, but it's a large number. Keep in mind, the server itself, a single TSM server, can only ever store total maximum number of objects ever possible 2 to the 63rd. So you're already 2 to the 17th beyond, you know, multiplied over what we can actually store. Okay? So a 50-50 chance in 2 to the 80th objects is far exceeding the capabilities of one server ever in its lifetime, okay, based on our current implementation. So that's part of it. Secondly, the 50-50 chance is only for chunks that have the same size. We use a fingerprinting algorithm to maximize. We don't just slice it up into 4K chunks and say, let's see if this matches anything, right? We look for patterns in the data so that we know this seems like a reasonable place to start a chunk. There's a good chance that this is a good boundary position. Okay? So, and that gets back to the chunk size. All right? By using our our chunk size isn't exactly 256K. It's on average 256K because we use a variable block chunking algorithm. So in addition to, in for the 50-50 chance of 2 to the 80th, you also have to match the size. Okay, both of those are factors. And since the size can be anywhere from 50K to 4 meg, you have a wide range there. So you've got that. You've heard me talk about an MD5 digest as well. What we do is each individual chunk, as we analyze the data, each individual chunk is given a SHA-1 value, and then the next chunk we reset it. But what we don't reset is the MD5 signature. When we calculate the MD5, we actually do it for the entire object, so that if by chance we happen to use a false positive, even though the likelihood is very slim, if we happen to accidentally link up to the wrong chunk that happened to have the same size and same signature, it will almost mathematically be impossible that it will have the same MD5 signature when you take that different data and insert it into the same stream at the point where it was taken out of the file. Now, we haven't done the math on that. I'm not even sure it's possible. But now your chances are, 2 to the 80th plus the factor of the size being the same, and then the factor that the MD5 is going to actually match. So what we do is we can detect during restore, as we're putting the chunks back together, we can detect that we did something wrong in terms of linking up to a bad chunk. Or you might have had some media errors, whatever. But basically, with deduped objects now, every time you restore deduped objects, a deduped object, we will regenerate the MD5 and compare it to the one that we saw when we broke the object apart. Now, truthfully, this is something the server has never done in the past. We usually didn't do data CRCs or anything like that during restore at the individual file level. But now we do, specifically introduced for deduplication. If you, in fact, get one of these false positive, if we do detect the MD5 is different than when we broke it up, the restore is canceled. Unfortunately, we can't determine this until we've sent every last byte of data to the client. So if you have a 10-gig file, we'll send you all 10-gig and then tell you that it was bad. So that's how it has to be, unfortunately. We can't predict what the data is going to be until we actually read it and send it to the client. Now, if that happens, that we did determine that the MD5, that this particular object had a bad chunk, we have added to the server a requirement that before you reclaim a volume in a storage pool, that volume be backed up. Okay? So now what that means is, as we're identifying these, the identify process will happen as soon as the data is stored, if you have it set up for automatic identify. So as soon as you store the data, we're going to read it, we're going to calculate the SHAs of each chunk, we're going to calculate the MD5 of the whole file, and we're going to store all this in the database. At that point, we've identified the chunks, but we haven't removed them. As we said, removal occurs during reclamation. We won't reclaim this volume until it's been backed up. Okay? So you have to do a backup storage pool to any other pool, or is it a non-dedupe pool? I can't remember, Howard, which is it?
Non-dedupe.
The non-dedupe pool before this volume will reclaim. Okay? So what that means is we will guarantee that the copy in the copy pool is the original data. Okay? So that if the original one, after we do the deduplication, gets messed up, we have the original data before we even did anything with it sitting off in the copy pool as it was sent up by the client. Okay? That's kind of the mitigation that we've put into this, where we believe that we don't need to do the byte-wise comparison. Now, when we mentioned this to some banks, they said, well, I can't tolerate that. And that's like, well, okay, then you can't use our deduplication, right? You can use diligent or something else that does the bytewise compare. And that's just the trade-off that we've made. We believe that there's enough security built into this thing, or not security, integrity built into this that we feel very safe without having to do the bytewise compare.
Just to understand it correctly, it's not a requirement to have a copy storage pool for a dedupe pool.
That's
but
it is if you want to deduplicate. If you really want to live on the edge and you don't care about, you know, perhaps losing data, which, you know, TSM's in the business of not losing data, so it's kind of like, why do you have TSM if you don't care about your data? But if you really want to live on the edge, there is an option in the you can put in the options file to turn off that requirement that dedupe, it's called dedupe requires backup. You can set that to no, and we'll go ahead and reclaim it even without a backup.
Okay.
So, yeah, we don't want to advertise that too much, but, you know, if that's really what you want, okay.
No, but then,
not recommended.
We don't want to advertise it. We need to say, generally speaking, it is a requirement to have a backup storage pool for dedupe pool. Correct?
That's the default, yes. In order for us to actually remove the duplicates, yes, you have to do that. You have to have a backup. Unless you turn on this option. But obviously we understood that people would want to live on the edge, so we added the option.
Okay, I understand that. Thank you.
And we do have one more question. We'll hear from Tom Beebe with Sirius Computer Solutions. Mr. Beebe, your line is open. If you're on a speakerphone, would you please check your mute function?
Hello?
Yes, please go ahead, sir.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, I was wondering on the dedupe process, is it possible to throttle it, in other words, to throttle the CPU utilization that it's going to take?
Not really. What throttles it is going to be how many different processes you have running. What I've seen on some of my smaller AIX systems is that with one process, I don't usually get more than 40% CPU utilization. If I really want to max out CPU, I have to have more than one process running. Because there's a lot of I.O., you know, we do the I.O. and the analysis, more I.O., so it's interspersed. It's not like we're calculating an FFT or something. You know, it is mathematically based, but there are breaks. So I don't think you're going to completely consume a CPU if you have only one process running,
okay.
One identified process running.
All right. Thank you.
And at this time, we have no further questions. Ms. Cheong, I'll turn it back over to you for any closing or additional remarks.
Thank you, everyone, for joining this call. Remember, it was recorded, so if you have any colleagues who'd be interested in listening, we'll be posting the replay out on the Tivoli Talk website as well as Partner World. And remember, we do have additional Chalk Talks with Development coming up. We have one on the Reporting, Monitoring, and Admin Console next week on April 9th, and an additional one on the TSM4 family, so TSM for databases, mail, et cetera, on April 16th. So we look forward to hearing from you then. Thanks again.
And once again, that concludes our conference. Thank you all for joining us.